Today on Open Kwong Door, hockey guy Gord Stellick. So I think it's recording.
Hi everybody, I'm PJ Kwong, with not with Kurt Browning, with Paul Dore.
Seems to be working.
Welcome to Open... Oh, I'll start that one again.
Maybe, yeah. Okay, good. And then I'll do one. Okay, PJ, so I'll be honest with you. I don't know anything about hockey.
I don't either. I do know that 1972, series of games, Canada won, I think.
And they're playing Russia.
Maybe. Yes. Okay. I know. Now, Gord Stellick, though, is knee-deep in hockey like I am in figure skating. So, and I'm very interested in talking to anybody who's passionate about their sport and about what they do. And we clearly spend a lot of time in rinks, right? I mean, all of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a very interesting conversation about all kinds of things. And one of the things that we talked about, which I find very interesting, is the whole idea of single sports versus team sports and kind of the difference in personality of kids that are involved in one or the other. And I think it's important for kids to be involved in sport. So does Gord. He had some great ideas about the lessons that can be learned from sport. So all in all, a great conversation. I grabbed him at the CBC to say, do me a favor, come do a podcast. He and I went to university together, so we've known each other a very long time. And I just love his candor and his sense of self. I mean, he was great.
Well, I thought it was really interesting to hear him talk about a lot of the things that he did, and I think it's interesting to hear from people that are usually doing the commentating or doing the interviewing for them to kind of to hear sort of stories. They've talked to a lot of people that they have a lot of different experiences, so it's always kind of neat to hear. It's sort of like a behind-the-scenes kind of thing.
Well, and you know what? As far as I'm concerned, he's a real Renaissance guy. I mean, he's been an executive at the highest level as far as, being GM of a hockey team, the Maple Leafs. He has been a media guy for the last however long. He's got the Hockey Night in Canada radio show on Sirius Radio. He's on the Fan 590 if you're in the Toronto area. He's an author. He's one of the go-to people for finding out about sort of what's going on with the teams. He understands negotiations. I mean, he understands all of it. And from that standpoint, somebody who understands the business as well as the sport is really interesting to me. And I think that Gord Stellick has got lots of things to offer as far as messages, whether you like hockey or not. It doesn't really matter. He's just a wonderfully articulate person. And his most recent book, I love the name of this one, Stellictricity. Don't you love it?
I do. And as you were talking, I was just thinking, I think it would be very hard to be the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs. They just don't seem to. There seems to be a lot of pressure on that position. So it was sort of just kind of interesting to hear his take and what happened and what what happened after that. How he sort of just picked up and kept going, and he's, like you said, done all these different things, so it was pretty good. And where can we? Is he?
He's on Twitter.
He's on Twitter. He is, isn't everybody?
At Gord Stellick.
Oh.
And you know, he's got way many more followers than I do and you do combined. I'm so sorry to say that. And Open Kwong Door, but really, you should follow at Open Kwong Door and Gord Stellick. He's just great. And you want to hear something interesting? What is so fascinating to me as I get older and as you get older and the world gets to be a much smaller place, Gord and I went to university. He was very good friends with a friend of mine. That's how I know him. And then as we finished our podcast, he told me he had 30 minutes. So I'm fascinated to see that our interview took exactly 29 minutes and 47 seconds. Am I good or what? You give me 30 minutes? We're done in 30 minutes.
Oh, yes, you're good. We all know that.
No, I don't mean good about the interview part. I just mean, so it was a lot of pressure to get a lot of information out. But the thing that was really cool is as we finished and we're milling around in the sports department, Scott Russell, who's the face of CBC Sports, came up, and his very first interview as a broadcaster was Gord Stellick. I made a mistake. His very first interview with a GM of a hockey team was Gord Stellick. And here we are all these years later. Anyway, interesting. I hope you like it.
Gord, welcome.
PJ, we go way back, don't we?
We certainly do. Okay, this we already know. We went to university together.
That's correct.
We work at the same place.
Yeah.
And you have since told me that now you're coaching in my rink. So what I want to know is, are you stalking me?
Now, is your picture up there?
Yes,
yeah, it
is.
That's right. I look at all the pictures in the wall. North Toronto Arena. And 9-year-old son Justin plays for the North Toronto team, Minor Adam. So, yeah, why not? If I'm going to stalk somebody, which I guess isn't a cool word anymore. So we're following each other. We've reconnected.
Just want to say something, Gord, though. I noticed on my Twitter that you are not following me on my Twitter, although I am following you.
Okay, I will correct that.
Don't you tease me.
Somebody else handles my Twitter. I've got to get more on social media than that.
It's so much fun. I'll teach you. Really, okay. Honestly, it's a lot of fun. Okay, so what I want to know is, I want to talk about the young Gord. You, of course, are as entrenched in hockey as I am in figure skating, and I thought it would be interesting to talk to you about where did that start?
Well, you know, and that's where, you know, talking to young people today about it is that I was a high school kid, went to George Vanier Secondary School in North York, loved sports, passionate about sports. And my break was in high school. A guy named Stan Abodiak was the public relations director for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So a neighbor of mine, we're best friends with the Abodiaks. He got a job when I was in grade 12. My buddy did, working part-time on Leaf game nights. And then in grade 13, they needed somebody else. So I became, Stan asked my buddy, and I got in working Leaf game night. So it was phenomenal. It was like that part was a dream that I really had no connection with, just got fortunate about. And then I was taking commerce at University of Toronto, commerce and economics, and got a chance to work more in the front office part-time. And, you know, so I always tell people, like, it's weird. People have these courses they take, and they want to be a journalist, a public relations director, a general manager. And, you know, it's not that the paths are so varied out there. So I got fortunate that was my entree into it, and it kind of grew from there.
That's what I thought was so interesting, because we have parallel lives. I mean, I'm a modern languages graduate from the same school, University of Toronto, and I could not have imagined for myself that I ended up here. This was not where I thought I would be. So were you a hockey player?
I was a hockey player, but, you know, house league and a little bit of rep. I wasn't a great hockey player. I was a passionate. Baseball was probably my best sport, but I was not going to turn pro in any of them. But I was a, you know, passionate fan, passionate player of everything. Just loved it, just enjoyed it, which is, you know, what I encourage people to do. And, you know, the strange thing is, PJ, that and what I tell young people today, and when you just mentioned about Twitter, is whatever you're looking to get into, be ahead of the curve.
I agree.
Something different. And yep. My thing was I could type. I could type 70 words a minute back when guys didn't type.
Boy, you're right about that.
Well, when I was in grade 10 typing at Vanier, I was one of three boys in it. But it got me an easy 90 plus. And I remember at the end of the year, in an old sexist society, the teacher had a typing tea party where she gave out our typing awards. And it was in the main library, and a bunch of buddies were there, and they started like catcalling me when I got, you know, my thing. But ultimately, when what happened was this part-time job in the Leaf press box for a couple of years, and then in 1977, a guy named Howie Starkman left the Leafs to become the first ever public relations director of the Toronto Blue Jays. And they had a void mid-season about someone to do the press notes and statistics that they give to the media each home game. I was a pleasant looking guy, kept my mouth shut, wore a suit, just, you know, yes sir, no sir, and, you know, made an impression that way. But then they learned I could type. And they brought me in and said, look, could you do this? Because not a lot of, you know, it was still a sexist yep. world. So a guy was going to get it. Not a lot of guys could type. And Jim Gregory, the general manager, then just said, okay, well, if you can do that, that's great. But look, you don't bug the secretaries, okay? You got to do, you know, you do all that stuff. So I ended up like with the Gestetner and the pink ink and,
wow,
you know, all that. And that's why I kind of tell people nowadays is, you know, be ahead of the curve about social yep. media, about the internet, about all these other things that older people like you and I aren't so well-versed on.
Well, and, you know, you have to have a natural sort of aptitude to be able to do that stuff. True story. My father told me not to take typing because he didn't want me to be a secretary. So I took typing in grade 9, and the only reason why I got a passing grade was I promised the typing teacher I would never take it again, which is very funny considering that I write for a living. But you should see, I only type with my left index finger. I'm not a good typist. Certainly never 70 words a minute. But interesting, you're right. Back in the day, it was a very sexist world. That's a really interesting story.
Well, I would not be here if I didn't type 70 words a minute.
Wow.
So do I tell people to go out and type 70 words a minute? Well, nowadays most people do type
sure.
well, but that's just what I mean. So if you got, like, it's just strange things. If you've got these other skills, and, you know, I've kind of learned a couple of credos about that. And One in general is the world doesn't move to, doesn't move to your timetable.
Yep.
So don't be insulted by that. That, you know, when I got fired by the New York Rangers as assistant general manager and came back to Toronto, and I go, hey, here I am. Look at this. Youngest general manager in NHL history, youngest ex-general manager in NHL history, now a couple of years in New York. Well, the world said great, but there was nothing for me.
Yeah.
And then eventually I started this second career in media. So it doesn't mean that, you know, don't be slighted. It's just that there has to be an opportunity out there and a way to go about it. And the other thing is just when people come in and say, you know, I want to be a general manager. So it's always great to have that one goal, or I want to play in the NHL. So you got that big door you want to get through. But don't ignore the side doors. So sometimes a side door opens and it leads to more side doors and more side doors. And then you go, what the hell happened here? Like I'm knee deep in all that stuff. And for me, after I got fired by the New York Rangers, I was looking to get back working with an NHL team, and just little things started dabbling on the media side. So a door open, then more open, and then all of a sudden, you know, from being really unemployed for a bit to you know, trying to get back in, and then I'm in the media. I was dabbling, and then all of a sudden, holy crap, I'm not an ex-general manager anymore. I'm an ex-general manager who's a media guy.
Who's a now current media guy. So let me talk to you a little bit about being fired, because I think that people are afraid of failure. So when you have to forge a career for yourself, what is the lesson that can be learned from being fired? I mean, Brian Burke, where are we? 2 weeks away from that happened, what, two weeks ago, last week, whatever it was? So it's a very public, it must feel like a bit of a humiliation, I'm sure. So what lesson can you take out of that, or what lesson did you take out of that?
Well, in my case too, it's a double-edged sword about being public. That when you get fired, the bad thing is everybody knows, but the good thing is everybody knows.
Okay.
So, as you know, like you don't get a chance to breathe, and all of a sudden, whereas you know, if I hate to say, I don't mean to call them the average person, but if a lot of people got fired, not a lot of people would know outside of their realm, right? So you might get a chance to lick your wounds a little bit. On the other side, you get all kinds of phone calls, which, you know, I kind of kid that in my neighborhood I live in, I could say, hey, where's PJ? Where's she been? They go, oh, she got fired 3 months ago, and she's been lying in the fetal position in her house to pray. And I go, geez, I feel bad about that, but I didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the funny part about, or an interesting part about mine. You really, boy, oh boy, that's when you have to be emotionally strong, that you, because it is like a sledgehammer in the gut.
Yeah.
And it is like, so you have to keep your bearings, you have to keep your wits about yourself. At a time when you want to tell the whole world to F off, you really have to bite your lip on that. And then you pick up, and, you know, maybe you can get into something right away, who knows what. But as my brother Bob, you know, told me last time when I got fired by the fan radio station a couple of years ago.
And now you're back.
I'm back. But yeah. He also said, you know, you got to take your bleep sandwich and eat it, and just, you know, not have too much pride about anything.
Yeah.
You know, keep active, keep networking. Don't be afraid to call people. Like, you kind of go, geez, I don't want to call PJ anymore because, you know, she knows I'm looking for a job. And well, no, but that's okay.
Yeah.
The people like, you know, the best way I always tell people is let people know what you're interested in and you're available, because you're not expecting them to get you something, but something may come up and they go, geez, you know what? Gord Stellick would be
the right
interested
guy.
In that, and the right guy. And because quite often, and I've done that with people too, that someone will say, what about this, that? And I go, son of a gun, this guy called me and, you know, maybe he's still available and could be a fit. And you love doing things like that. So you've really got to be proactive that way and put the bitterness behind and all those other things. It's a great life experience to have, even though the day and the few weeks after that, you would beg to differ.
Yes. Well, you know, you talk about emotional strength when you're fired, but you also quit, and you quit a fairly high profile job. That takes a certain amount of emotional strength. What was that like?
Well, it's, you know,
I'm talking about the.
Yeah, people think I got fired by the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I did resign as general manager.
Yes.
And it was interesting in that it was tough. And then the New York, I probably picked the wrong experience to go to New York. There were a couple other opportunities that might have been better for me. But then as I look back, all these experiences end up being great. But it made me a point of difference in other general managers that I did resign. I mean, that's my point that kind of got me credibility with the media and was different than Jerry McNamara or Floyd Smith or other people like that. So I had got the job under almost surreal circumstances and fortuitous circumstances. And then I was young, I was single. You think differently when you're older about stuff and you have realities. But, and I had an opportunity to go somewhere else. So, mm-hmm. so I took that opportunity, and I know, it, it was like, you know, you second guess yourself for a while about doing it or not doing it. But once you do something, it's best to have it done. And you always at times look back, oh boy, what could have been and that. And then you also realize, no, that's what made you different than the other guys. Harold Ballard had, you know, I get it now. He was 86 years old. My dad's 87 now. I get what 86 and 87 is. I mean, I was 30 back then. So little point of reference that was different, but it was like I had to, because he was squeezing me and he was grinding me, and I had known when I took the general manager's job that I would cease to be the fair-haired boy, and it was a job that you really couldn't win with him, because he was always the boss. So I think he was proud of me when I resigned, actually. I think, even though he died about 8 months later and that, I think I surprised him. And I think he was proud that I did it.
Do you know, in my own work, in my own life, I really believe that integrity rules. And if you live your life with integrity, then nobody can ever come back to you on any decision, as far as I'm concerned. And that's what it sounds like to me, was that Mr. Ballard was proud of you, because it wasn't perhaps a decision that he didn't like, but nevertheless, you stood your ground and you said no.
Yeah, and he was used to people
saying yes,
cowering and kissing his ass and everything like that, you know, and... not that later on I didn't, you don't start playing the corporate game a bit in different ways,
sure,
as you learned it. But at that particular point, I mean, it's what had got me there was my sense of intuitiveness and working with, I've been in the office a lot of years. Like, I was only general manager 16 months, but I worked there all told 14 years in different, starting with,
sure,
that high school job. So I had swam the chartered water or the chartered waters rather well. And
yes,
that one was, it was a good jumping off point. It was a necessary jumping off point.
So hockey today, how does it differ from the hockey game that you witnessed in 1975 when you were that high school kid with that first job?
Well, it's funny seeing those games now on Leafs TV. They have those classic old,
yep,
games. There's no advertising on the boards. Guys aren't wearing helmets. And, so the actual game, there's no comparison. I mean, nowadays, the guys are so much better. Doesn't mean,
okay,
it's a better game. That's a whole different story.
Okay.
But nowadays, shifts are short. Everything's done at max speed. I think back, you don't find anywhere when a whistle goes and the same guys stay on the ice. I mean, that used to be a couple of whistles and Sittler, McDonald, and Earl Thompson stay on for another shift. So there's that's what's different now. It's just incredible the shape they're in and everything else that goes about it. It's just done at breakneck speed, and that's a big reason we have so many injuries. The other part about it, it's become such a big business, and I'm not doing the "woe is me" when I was a little boy. The snowbanks were like 6 feet high and all that. It's more that, there was a intimacy back then that, guys were, and a lot of it's generated by money, that guys were making an average salary of maybe $125,000 or a really good salary, but not millions and millions of dollars, and they didn't drive in underground parking like they do now, like rock stars. They had to walk out of the corner of Church and Wood Street and face the mob after every game. So there was more of a connect that way about it. It was like a much more intimate business. So those things there, two things that have really changed now. But I'm fortunate that the proliferation of the media, which I got to be a part of, and if it hadn't expanded, maybe I wouldn't be a part of, is a big reason there's so much coverage now, and it's so intense, and they make so much money. That's just the way it's gone.
Is it hard for young people? I mean, I help to translate for these junior pieces about junior hockey players that are sponsored every year, and I'm fascinated to see these young 16 and 17-year-old boys that are in the junior
yeah,
leagues. But it seems like a lot of pressure. I mean, these kids are leaving home younger and younger. Seems like they're being more and more specialized. Is there a lot of expectation on hockey players today? Are they supposed to be like demigods? Are they able to live normal human lives? I mean, what's your perspective on that?
Well, Bobby Orr left home at 14 to play with the Oshawa Generals. And
wow.
And Jim McKenney, who was with the Leafs for a while. I remember I used to look at their old files. I love looking at the files of all the players there, just perusing them. And I remember Jim McKenney's, in his file, the first one was a scout. An old telegram said, Mrs. McKenney called me from Ottawa last night. Her boy Jimmy is homesick. I think he was a 16-year-old or 15-year-old and playing at Neil McNeil or St. Mike's here in the Leaf chain. So, that's gone on for a long time. My nephew was a 16-year-old who was in Belleville, playing with the Belleville Bulls for 2 years and with P.K. Subban. And that,
wow,
now he's with Queen's University and, moved on after that experience. So I think they do a good job about that nowadays. It would be tough having your kid going somewhere like that. But if they are doing that, that means they're good enough to pursue their dream. And that's just the reality of it nowadays. You know, the only thing I lament a bit is something Wayne Gretzky tries to stress as well, is let kids play all kinds of sports. You know,
yep.
It's become more of a 12-month-a-year thing, which for every sport.
I was going to say, my sport included.
Yeah, so it's, that's kind of the reality nowadays. If you can keep some balance and perspective that way, then it's good. If your kid's going away from home and he's got no chance, but you're just seeing it through rose-colored glasses, that's different. But nowadays, they do a good job as far as schooling, and they got pushed on that because they were losing people to athletic scholarships in the States. So the OHL had to, or the junior leagues in Canada had to step it up about 25 years ago, and they've done a good job with that.
So are you coaching your son's team?
Yeah.
What's that like, coaching your own kid?
It's better than I ever could have thought. It really is. And I've done it for 2 years now, and our guy Justin, he didn't make select the first 2 years he tried out and played house league, and then really had a passion, got better, and everyone kind of kids and goes, oh, yeah, of course you'd be coaching. Well, I really hadn't intended to get involved, and just some circumstances came up. And it's been a great hockey experience for me and for the team on the ice and off the ice. That's what I've tried to create. Last year we were a team that struggled a bit in the standings and played better at the end. This year we got a kick-ass team. It doesn't mean it's because of the coaching or anything, and it doesn't go to our heads that way. It's just that we've had both ends of the spectrum. But I find that if you're going to be at the games anyway, I like coaching. I just like being, nine. I don't know as they get older, but at nine right now they don't have girlfriends. They don't have a ton of homework. They don't have bills to pay.
Yeah.
They've got dreams, and they don't really stink.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
yet.
This may change now for me next year because I've taken on some work now at the Fan and Sportsnet around Leaf games. So I'm going to be tied up on the radio side there whenever there's a Toronto Maple Leaf game. And I have to now look at whether I can be the head coach anymore or not. I don't know. If I can't, it's what a great 2-year memory. Otherwise, if I can stay in some way, great. Otherwise, he'll play hockey and I'll enjoy cheering for him as a spectator and parent.
So tell me about the difference between parenting, because your daughter was a skater for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You've got two kids. Tell me the difference between parenting and coaching, or where the two roles intersect.
One thing I've done is I'm not a bad writer either, so I kind of...
You're a great writer. Who are we kidding?
I've done some of these, so I like sending these newsletters out to the parents. They're not overly, and some of them get a kick out of it because I try to have a little bit of humor in it, but also I just kind of let them know some basics that we're doing so they can reinforce them. And I'm not talking X's and O's, it's just, things like about, not taking shifts too long, making sure they back check and just stuff like that. So they can, if they're talking and just simple basics, so they can kind of reinforce that and whatever. They want to be let in a bit at this age. The parents like being let in a little bit that way. So I think it's once the game's on, you're the coach. So you've got to coach. So you're not coaching your kid and 16 other kids. And that's what you have to look at. Sentimentally, there's always a soft spot there, so just don't deny it. But also, just look at it that basically they're all your kids, that your wife, who probably is lying in the fetal position, delivered 17 kids at once. You had 17 tuplets or something like
yes.
that. So, and so that's how you kind of look at it that way. I just find it neat because we always want to get in our kids' world a bit, some more than others. Some parents are like crazy about what they do at school. I almost feel like going, why don't you just sit in the class? You're talking about every breath little Johnny's taken, for God's sake. And so this part, you get to be in the dressing room a bit. And so you get to kind of hear 9-year-olds, whatever, it's cool. It's kind of fun.
It's a fun age.
When it gets older, it's a bit different too. It's not
sure.
the same. They'll start tying up their own skates, and whatever. But it's just been a neat, mutually beneficial thing. And I think that whole role changes as they get older if you are a parent that continues to coach.
Now, tell me, there are single sports and there are team sports. Obviously, hockey's a team sport. What are the three best lessons that a team sport can teach a child?
I think you start off with the teamwork part, I think. I just think that's the best part, because in life, it's how you work, period. Like whether it's here at CBC or the Fan or Sportsnet or whatever, just about the like giving your best individual effort, but also if you do it in a team concept and how you can get success that way. And a team sport, the team concept will always beat the individual concept. It just will. So if the other team are playing as individuals, you will beat them as a team, even if they're more talented. And I like that life lesson. I like as well, in both sports, winning and losing, because we're creating this cocoon society that, you know, we want to protect our kids, and then we unleash them to kind of a dog-eat-dog world out there, and they're 20, and they go, well, how the hell did this happen?
Yep.
You know, what? Can't you make a phone call and get me that get me that surgeon's job without me going to 8 years of medical school or something like that? So I do like that there's score, and you win and you lose. And if you gave your best effort and you didn't win, that's fine. You know, if you tried to improve from it, whatever, that's fine. Do your best. And I think the other part is about doing your best, period, like whether you're winning or losing. So when you go to school, do your best. When you're doing, you know, other things, do your best. As a friend, do your best. Attacking life, do your best. Chilling, do your best. You know, that's the kind of things. I think sports, I think it delivers so many of those things. So many of those things, even if you're just, you know, whatever level you choose to be in.
Do politics play a part in the NHL? I mean, I've got cousins that are very, very involved in hockey, young cousins, and the parents talk to me a little bit about the politics of selection in terms of teams for children. I don't really know. I don't have any experience with that. But does it go all the way up?
This word politics, and it's, you know, I try to create, and we've done it 2 years running now, the best hockey experience on and off the ice. And I don't, you know, and people will quickly throw that word politics out. My younger brother Bob, had the older kids who played. Like, what I pleasantly found is there's far more positive experiences in people than negative. It's not even close. But people always hone in on the dreaded skating mom or hockey dad. You know, they hone in on that as being the typical, and it's not.
I agree.
You know, maybe we get a little bit consumed, but that's part of parenting. So, you know, Sidney Crosby, there's no politics involved in him being the best player.
I agree.
All the way up. Just, you
cream
know,
rises
just,
to the top.
Yeah. So nobody is not in the NHL because they weren't talented enough. Now, if it's a case of making the fourth line on a team and maybe not, well, you can always split hairs that way. But I think it's a cop-out in a lot of ways. I think quite often it's the parents that get so wrapped up in it. Like, we're starting to get the whole tryouts thing now. And I know parents call me because I was new to it as well. So you just got to get a little bit versed in it. But it's kind of like, oh, geez, I don't want to miss out. I don't be, well, just chill. It's okay. Like, I mean, whatever. It's just, you know, there'll be
tryouts. Just tryouts for next year?
Yeah.
Now?
No. In when the season ends.
Oh,
I see. They happen in about 6 or 8 weeks. But, you know, people just get, you know, and that's what they do about their kids. So, no, the politic thing, I think, is overplayed.
You know, it's interesting. In my own sport and figure skating, when I've got kids that try a test and don't do very well and they talk about the judging, I say, here's the solution. Skate well.
Yeah.
If you skate well, you don't have to worry about the judges. You need to do your job and then leave everything else around. Oh, well, they didn't like me. No. You made mistakes. If you don't make mistakes, you're okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm like you. I just feel that don't concern yourself with what's outside of the sport. Just do what you need to do inside the sport in order to be the best athlete you can be.
I was my brief time as general manager, I remember being in a general manager's meeting, and you look at the other general managers and, you know, wow, there's, you know, Harry Sinden and Lou Lamoriello and Phil Esposito and Tony Esposito, and Bobby Clark was there from Philadelphia. And, of course, they were talking about officiating. So they're going around talking about officiating, and all of a sudden Bobby Clark gets up and he goes, holy crap. He goes, you know something? He goes, we keep changing this every year. He goes, how the hell do the guys know what to do? He goes, our buildings are full. The right teams, the best teams always win. Why do we keep beating this to death? And that was so true that, you know, working for a team that didn't succeed as much as the, you know, like Toronto Maple Leafs struggled in the 1980s, officiating's a cop-out. You know, it balances out in the end. So, you know, there's going to be a game where you get a bad judge in skating. There's going to be maybe an unfair judgment, whatever, in skating, and a game where the officials were terrible against your team in hockey. But at the end of the day, that's not what determines it all.
Whether it's agree.
Writings, but just, like, get rid of excuses. That's all. Get rid of excuses.
Do your job. Don't make mistakes. Skate well.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the answer as far as I'm concerned. So what I want to know is, you're an author. What was the writing experience like?
I've done a few books, and one was my time with the Leafs. It was called Hockey Heartaches and Hal, with Jim O'Leary. And actually, it's an excellent book. It probably came out too soon. It came out in 1991, which it was still too fresh, the Ballard years.
Yep.
People have since read it. And
I'm going to go out and get it.
It's a great book. It's hard to find, but it's there. Then I did a book about the 67 Leaf team
yep.
with Damian Cox called 67, the team that last won the Stanley Cup. And that was a real book. I mean, we had a great collaboration that way as you know, because I remembered it. Damian didn't. I was kind of passionate and connected to those guys, which, you know, Damian wasn't, which is good. He could be more objective. He's a great writer. I'm an okay writer. So it was a great co-op there. We really did. It was neat. It was labor of love, and we worked hard on it. And then I did kind of a fun book after I got fired from the Fan called Stellectricity. So I could just churn out stories, you know, short little stories and anecdotes and stuff. And so they've all been a bit different. The last one was really the only one I did alone. And they're neat experiences. You know, you never get the money. People think it's not the big money like you think, but it was neat.
It's a labor of love. So I want to know, who did you watch hockey with when you were a kid? Or did you?
I could be down by myself. It didn't matter. Whatever was going on, I watched it on TV.
In the rec room?
In the rec room. You know, my dad, you know, people are surprised. My dad wasn't a hockey fan at all. You know, just he's a blue-collar TV repairman from Czechoslovakia, what was then Czechoslovakia. He liked individual sports like swimming, skiing, tennis, you know, did his thing. And, you know, all this whole, even if you're older back then, you didn't go, there were no sports bars. Now people watch in a group. So you watched in your rec room. You know, you did. And then my brother Bob, who's 2 years younger, would watch. Maybe a friend would be over and never missed a game.
So tell me about that Stanley Cup series in 1967. You would have been 10.
Yeah.
10?
I would have been 10.
Yep. Almost.
And it was
Do you
great.
Remember it?
Yeah, I do. I do remember a lot of parts of it. And I can remember Bob Pulford scoring in double overtime. And I remember George Armstrong scoring the empty net goal to seal it. And then I got to work with George Armstrong just a few years later. It was neat with Damian. We got copies of all those playoff games, the 12 playoff games. And we were able to watch the games looking back at it. And after me talking to all the players, I ended up talking to every single player that was still living from that team. And so it was a great, great perspective. What came out more was it was a very different Stanley Cup than the three they'd won consecutively in 62, 63, 64. People didn't really know that. They kind of lumped them all together. And guys like, you know, Larry Hillman and Marcel Pronovo and up front Mike Walton and Jim Pappan never got the credit they deserved. That was their Stanley Cup. That wasn't Frank Mihalovic and Bob Pulford and George Armstrong and Alan Stanley and Tim Horton. They had pretty ordinary playoff that year. And so that part was, you know, really neat to do and to get a real accurate story. And then it also gave us a bit that we figured out that it kind of masked what was happening to the Leafs. There was already this decay that was happening within the organization. And we articulate that about the fights at the ownership level and what was going on and has continued to, you know, be there in different ways, shape and form over the last four decades.
Who's your favorite hockey player?
Favorite hockey player now or back then?
Of all time.
Bobby Orr would be my favorite hockey player of all time. But when I was a kid, I loved a third line guy named Jim Harrison who played for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like I just, you know, I loved that kind of guy. And then in acknowledging Bobby Orr, I should take a step back because I did work for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Boris Salming. Just what a thrill and pleasure to be able to watch all his games. And what I learned to appreciate and respect especially was the team had success early on in his career. Later on, it wasn't a good team, but he attacked every night like a Hall of Famer. And that's harder.
Wow.
It's easy when you got a great team and you're along for the ride, but to go out and play like he did game in, game out, you know, is something I always remember. So I would put him as my favorite.
Okay, two quick questions. One is, what is your best professional quality?
My best professional quality.
Because you're adorable in real life.
That's true.
You know, in your real life.
I think is that I get it.
Okay.
Whatever it is, I get it. Because I find in life there's just people that get it and don't get it. I get it. I connect with the fan. I am those people. I took the subway and the Leslie bus to go to Marty games in Maple Leaf Gardens. I get it. I get how they're connected. I get how it works. And I think that's probably what's best suited me.
I lied. There's actually three questions. Any professional stones unturned?
Isn't it neat to say no? You know,
it's wonderful.
You know, it's because my stone now is the kids, and I'm not Kathy Lee Gifford here. It's just about they're 13 and 9, and I'm a guy
Great
in my
age.
my mid 50s. So it's neat to have because I started the journey late in parenting, I can kind of enjoy the ride a bit more. So it's the stone continues to be. I think you knew me way back when, because we had a mutual friend that I worked at a camp for autistic kids for a number of summers as well. Mm-hmm. I've got a brother who's autistic. He's in his 40s. So, and that was a great experience. And I was the camp director for 3 years. And that was a very different role than you think. So I think the professional stone is that if I can continue doing things that I love and I'm passionate about and embrace my skill set, then that's great. And I've been fortunate to more often than not be able to do that.
Okay. Here's the sentence I need you to complete. I need you to tell me I am.
I am. Let me think here. I am. Well, I think I'm a guy that is fortunate that, you know, my parents, my dad, you know, teaches you that you could do anything you want to do, and you got a mom who teaches you to smell the coffee and enjoy everything while you're doing that, you know. So I think it's just I am a guy that's unafraid of the next minute and the next day, the next hour, whatever it may be. Like I just I'm a guy that's stammering and stuttering right now, but I just I'm a guy that's comfortable in his own skin. How about that? Maybe that's good.
Do you know what? That's perfect. Thanks
there
so much for talking to me, Gord Stellick.
Thank you, PJ.
You have been a delight.
So, Paul, what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I don't know anything about hockey, and it's funny you mentioned being involved in something like skating and being involved in something like hockey. You're in the rinks, you're in the same environment, but at the same time, it's like you're passing these people in the hallway. We never stay to watch hockey games, and they don't come to watch figure skating practices.
Not often.
So it's kind of like you're working. It's like working side by side with somebody, but you never ever talk to them. And the whole thing about sort of individual sports versus team sports and all that kind of thing, I can see it. Thinking back when I was a kid, I didn't play any team sports. I just liked to sort of do my own thing and enjoy that. And now that I'm doing a little bit of teaching, you do see that in the kids, where some of them, you go kind of understand why they just like to kind of go off in the corner or do their own little thing. But there are lots of kids that also like to be more involved in the team stuff and
absolutely.
Of that stuff. So it's, and all this stuff, it's good. It's being involved in this sport is good. I thought it was interesting hearing him talk about coaching his son's hockey.
I liked
it
too. And do you know what else? What I loved about him is that his description of himself, I think, is perfect. He gets it. He's lived long enough and an interesting enough life that there really aren't that many curveballs left to be thrown at him. He can see them coming. And he understands that, you know, you've got to sort of roll with the punches. And you're right, his perspective on coaching I thought was great. And his perspective on, you know what, just go out there and do what you're supposed to do. Don't worry about what's going on in the back rooms of wherever. Just do your job as an athlete. So I really enjoyed it. And I really do believe Gord Stellick gets it. So if you want to hear more from him, at Gord Stellick on Twitter, you can listen to him for the moment on Sirius Radio. And of course, he's covering Maple Leaf hockey games on Fan 590 in the Toronto area. And he was a trip. Loved it.
And please go to our website, openkwangdor.com, and also follow us on Twitter at openkwangdor. I think that's it for this one.
Well, unless people want to contact us, contact@openkwangdor.com. Now we're done.